Solo by William Boyd. In the writing of this novel, I have been governed by the details and chronology of James Bond's life that were published in the obituary in You Only Live Twice. The novel was the last to be published in Ian Fleming's lifetime. It is reasonable to assume, therefore, that these were the key facts about Bond and his life that he wanted to be in the public domain. Facts that would cancel out various anomalies and illogicalities that had appeared in the earlier novels. Consequently, as far as this novel is concerned, and in line with Ian Fleming's decision, James Bond was born in 1924. Part 1. Breaking and Entering. Chapter 1. In Dreams Begin Responsibilities. The Key to Rebecca by Ken Follett. Our spy in Cairo is the greatest hero of them all. Erwin Rommel, September 1942. Part 1. Tobruk. The last camel collapsed at noon. It was the 5-year-old white bull he had bought in Giallo, the youngest and strongest of the three beasts, and the least ill-tempered. He liked the animal, as much as a man could like a camel, which is to say that he hated it only a little.
Bitter Fruit by Ahmad Dango.
Silas heard about Johan Fuljun's death during a break in the weekly ministerial meeting.
Primi's husband.
Ix, they were about to be divorced, the bearer of the tidings said.
My God, her daughter Vinu and my son.
People looked up from their papers, waiting for Silas to complete his sentence.
They're friends,
he said with a shrug, and fetched a copy of the Star to read the details for himself. Fuljun's body had been discovered by a passing jogger at 7 o'clock the previous evening. It was unclear, a police spokesman said, whether there was a political motive for the killing, or whether it had been an ordinary crime. The bulk of the report was devoted to Fuljun's political career, his prison term for sabotage, his years in exile in the Netherlands, his lectureship in history at Leiden University.
ISIS Audiobooks presents an unabridged recording of Blenheim Orchard, written by Tim Pears and read by Paul Hertzberg. Part 1. A Family in the Morning. Thursday, 19 June, 2003. Children interfere with their parents. Siblings mess with each other's minds. Wives intrude upon their husbands' dreams. Ezra Pepin realized that he must have moved in his sleep, must have inched across the king-size bed. Sheena had drawn him towards her. That's what she'd done. Sleep-swollen, warm-blooded limbs brushed and rubbed against his. Was he still asleep? An aquatic detachment, limbs underwater. His wife murmured in his ear, tugging him to her. He eased his naked body over the mattress. What time was it? Ezra allowed his eyelids droopily to open, then close, enough to expose a grainy impression of the wall beyond. 4 connecting lines of light, a rectangular frame in the gloom. The morning was trying to push in, to impose itself through cracks around the monochromatic curtains. No sound of children. How long did they have? Sheena's warm leg between his legs drawing him to her. Was she awake? Her hot, sleep-filled breath murmuring non-word sounds, desire, encouragement in his ear. Is it safe? Ezra whispered. His phallus in her hand. She took it into her. Ezra's breath caught with gratitude. He relished unmuzzled sensation, the yielding, enveloping welcome. Are we safe? She murmured her assurance and pushed against him. He reciprocated. He didn't need to look to know that Sheena's eyes were closed too. He pressed his right thigh against her. Wondered whether Sheena wanted to be stimulated any further into wakefulness, even with pleasure, or whether she preferred to remain half asleep, moving the way they were, undulating in the dark, deep underwater creatures making somnambulistic love. When it was over, Ezra lay, breathing hard against her. He turned onto his back. Sheena rested on his chest. Ezra opened his eyes. The sun had forced a little more light into the room. "Tea?" he whispered.